Today's program was brought to you by Union Beer. For more information, visit greatbrewers.com.
Hi, this is Celia Kutcher, host of Animal Instinct, and you are listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey, welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43 in the East Village and the Good Beer Seal. Today is Tuesday, September 22nd, 2015. We've got some great guests today, including Lori and Dietrich from Indian Ladder Farms and Helderberg Hop Farm in upstate New York, and Joel from Three's Brewing. And I'd also like to welcome back our fall guest host, Stephen Vallon. Stephen, how are you, buddy?
I'm doing great. How are you?
So you guys just had a really cool launch party at Broken Brewery on Friday night.
Yeah, speaking of hops, we did an event at Brooklyn Brewery launching our Sriracha Ace beer making kit, a collaboration we did with Brooklyn Brewery. So a beer made with just a lot of Sriracha Ace hops.
That's great. Doing events at Brooklyn Brewery is really cool, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really it's a fantastic space, and I recommend anyone who hasn't been should go and just buy lots of tokens.
Well, good luck with your kit, and I know that I think one of the first shows in December we'll have you on with Garrett Oliver talking about the collaboration, the kit that you guys made so that other people can make Sriracha Ace beer, man.
Absolutely.
All right.
Great show.
And Beer Sessions Radio is brought to you by Union Beer Distributors, supplier of world-class ales and lagers. If you have questions, you can tweet us at @beer_sessions. And if you really want to, you can call the studio if you're listening live, 718-497-2128. All right. In studio guests, we've got Lori Ten Eyck and Dietrich Gehring, who we know as Indian Ladder Farms, but they also they wrote a book called The Hop Grower's Handbook, which is pretty awesome. It's covering everything you need to know about growing hops in the Northeast, right, Lori? All right, I'll give you. You guys need mics over there.
That is correct, Jimmy.
That's great. And you brought along Stuart Morris, who's a partner with the Indian Ladder Brewing. How are you, Stuart?
Pretty good, Jimmy. Glad to be back.
And then you guys are in town today. We'll go to what you guys actually did in town today. You guys are at Threes with hey, Joel. How are you, Joel Ford?
Yeah, good, man. Doing well.
Good, buddy. All right. So, Dietrich, tell us about what you did today. You're in town. You wrote the book. You guys are promoting your hops and
all this cool stuff. Well, we didn't actually do it today. It was about 2 weeks ago. We did a wet hop beer with Threes. We rushed down some beer, some hops from the farm to get them right in the kettle at the right time. And today we're sampling some of that beer. We stopped over at Threes and we grabbed Joel and the beer and came over.
It's all right, man. So, Joel, what did you guys do with this beer? So, you tell us the process. They came to your brewery 2 weeks ago with fresh hops.
Okay, yeah.
What did you guys do?
So, this beer is our Here You Go Pale Ale, but brewed with hops from Indian Ladder Farm that were picked the day before. So, it's our 5.5% wheat pale ale with the addition of, and we'll let Dietrich talk more about the hops that we use for this, but we use the hops in the boil as bittering, finishing additions, and a big addition using our mash tun as a hop act. So extracting, you know, maximum hop flavor out of these really, really fresh hops that we don't get a chance to use.
Yeah, mostly it was, there was 132 pounds of wet hops that we brought down. The bulk of it was Nugget and Brewer's Gold, but we also had some Cascade and some Chinook in there. Which I think the Chinook is probably what's given it that little bit of that orangey feel, you know, and the taste in your mouth, which I'm quite pleased about.
Well, that's great. Well, that's definitely going to get us through the show. We're going to be drinking some Threes and then some beer that you also made.
Yeah, we brought down an estate beer that we made in June. It's all, we grew the barley, we grew the hops, cultivated the yeast off some blueberries, and the rhubarb and strawberries came from the farm as well, and we're pretty pleased with it.
So you guys have done a couple other collaborations with Threes, haven't you? Or was it Other Half as well?
Other Half made a stout last fall that we were very pleased with, and that was almost all, it used our grain. It used a lot of Brewer's Gold, which Sam Richardson, we were hoping he was going to do an IPA, and once he smelled the Brewer's Gold, he said, "Oh, this has a really wonderful current kind of smell to it. It'll be great in a stout." And you know, if Sam says that's what he wants to do, that's what he wants.
Yeah, only Sam. I remember that came out. It was the Indian Ladder.
It was Indian Ladder Stout.
Stout.
Yeah, and it was very popular. In fact, he said, "Well, we'll give you 5 kegs," and we came down to get our kegs, and they had sold all of them.
So. Well, let's take a step back. So, you know, you're growing hops, and Lori, how did you guys start growing hops? Because first of all, this is a great book, and we're going to talk about the book because I love books.
Thank you. Well, we started growing hops in a small scale in the garden about 25 years ago. You know, always had a lifelong interest in beer and loved the hop plant. It's just a very unusual plant. Obviously, it grows extremely tall if you provide it the vertical space. So we had a hop plant in our herb garden that took over the herb garden, and we fought it like crazy to try to tear it up and get rid of it, and it's really hard to get rid of. We transplanted it and grew it in a different part of the garden, and now it's, how tall is that one?
It's like 25 feet tall, and it's 28 years old, so hops are an incredible plant. They'll grow to be, you know, they'll grow 100 years, but their productive life's about 25.
Yeah, so we were just growing them in the garden, and then, you know, my family has an orchard in Albany County where we have grow apples and all kinds of berries and fruits and vegetables, and we have a market and a pick-your-own. And this was a family business. It's been in my family for about, well, I think I'm the fourth generation. So a couple...
That's like 3,000 years.
Yes, we live
Doesn't
very...
Doesn't it feel that way? I mean, you pass down something from generations.
Yes, I mean... people in my family live extremely long. Sometimes it does feel that way. And the... what happened was my dad decided the farm is originally made of 5 farms that my great grandfather bought back in 1915, and my father decided to break out one of those farms again and gave it to us as sort of an early inheritance. So we then owned this piece of farmland, and we were trying to figure out what to do with it. And Dater started to get interested in growing hops, and the state had the farm brewery law. And it all just seemed to sort of fall into place that we were going to start growing hops on a larger scale.
Yep.
Before we jumped in, we did start with a very small, like eighth of an acre sort of pilot hop yard. So we tried it out, putting up the trellis and growing the hops. And now we're about at an acre, a full acre.
So if you wanted to grow hops, you should start small.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you got to get your feet wet. You got to get your feet wet to understand, you know, about the plant, because it's like anything, you know, anything that you grow as a hobby does really well. If you're growing tomatoes, you know, you can grow those beautiful tomatoes on your porch, and if you're growing,
it's like, look, Ma,
your pet hop, you know, in your yard, it does really well. And as soon as you bump up to, you know, 100 of them or 1,000 of them, you discover it's suddenly farming.
And Stuart's laughing over here. So you're part of this too.
Yeah. Well, I started with these guys. We were working in a beer store in Boston 30 years ago, maybe.
Yeah, college.
So we've come a long way, and it's been a real learning experience for sure. You know, now we're becoming a regional hop processing farm. So, you know, we're doing 7 projects right now, and It's exciting.
I know we've had you on before, and I know you're going to be opening a tasting room and a lot of other things. But let's go back to growing hops. So you guys go, Stephen, have you ever grown hops?
We have. We live in a loft in downtown Brooklyn, so we've actually grown them indoors and outdoors. We have like 12-foot ceilings, and we always say that hops are the coolest thing to grow with kids, if you didn't mind teaching them about alcohol. But they really grow centimeters a day, and they're pretty amazing to watch grow. And we had them, they reached the ceiling, then started falling back to the ground.
Stuart's showing me scars on his arm. What is that from?
Yesterday was our last hop harvest. They get pretty bushy towards the end, and it's a wrestling match.
That's what we call the kiss of the hop. Hops have there's a difference between vines and binds. So grapes are considered vines, and they have tendrils. And that's how they pull themselves up and grow up onto the trellis. Well, hops are binds, and they don't have tendrils. What they have are trichomes, and they look like little anvils. They're microscopic, and that's how they pull themselves up. And it will also pull through your skin, too, as you're trying to maneuver them around. And we picked about, 100 pounds yesterday. And when it's hot out, you are foolish and you don't wear a long sleeve shirt, and you get your arms all torn up.
So how do you harvest hops? Let's say we have one plant that I only have one plant I want to harvest.
Well, we cut it at the bottom. We cut it at about 3 feet off the ground because we want to leave a little bit of the plant behind for photosynthesis, so the plant can still, because you're kind of cutting the plant at its prime. So we don't want to cut it at the ground, so we cut it about 3-4 feet. Then we cut it at the top, and then there's two ways you can go. If you are just have a few plants, you get your friends together and you hand pick, and you're all done. If you have 1,000 plants, you need a machine because you don't have that many friends. I don't care who you are.
And then what do you still have to cut them? And just walk us through this, man, because I've never harvested hops. So.
Well, for us, we cut them, like I said, top and bottom, and we throw them onto a truck, and we bring them into. We just purchased a Wolf hop processor from Germany. There really aren't many small-scale hop processing machines available in the United States, so we had to buy one. Ours is a 1974 vintage. It arrived on our farm in January. And we spent the last 8 months getting it going. The thing weighs about 5 tons. It's 18 feet tall. It had to be lifted off the truck with a crane and brought in. And then all the instructions are in German and needs to be put back together.
and when you say processor, what exactly does it do?
The processor, all it does is it has these picking drums in it that spin. And it pulls all the leaves and the cones off. The cones are what we want. That's the product we want. It's what the brewer wants. The lupulin is inside the cones, the brewer's gold. And so we want to get that the leaves, the bind, and the cones separated. So the machine basically does that. It pulls the leaves and the cones off, separates them, takes the bind and the string that we grow it on, chops that up as waste and separates the leaves and the cones, and then it has to go into drying at that point. And that's a whole another process after that. You can lose your whole crop if you don't condition your hops properly after they're picked.
So there's a lot of hands-on work. I just imagine these hop harvesters with went down the rows and
some
and
do.
They do.
Some do. And it depends on the scale of the farm. There's in England they use machines that go down the rows for dwarf hops where they grow on short trellises. Out in Yakima they have something called the Yakima Hop Harvester, which is basically a giant combine that goes through the field. But those are specific to those areas. Most of the world uses something called a top cutter. So it's actually a machine that it's like a sickle bar, and it cuts the hops off. They fall in the truck, and then they bring them into a facility that looks like it's the size of a warehouse. The warehouse is 500 by 300, and the machines are like $1 million. It's essentially like our Wolf hop harvester, but on steroids, and you can walk around inside it.
Amazing. All right, and Laura, what for you like? You grew up with an orchard, you grew up on a farm. What is it for you growing hops and this whole culture of beer and all these guys around you?
That is a really good question. Fortunately, in my life, we have a lot of friends and a lot of guy friends, and guys sitting around drinking beer has been the norm, wouldn't you say, Stuart, since we worked at the liquor store in Boston. So I'm pretty used to that. Now at least they're being productive. To a certain extent, because they're doing some work. And so that's an improvement. For me, it's interesting because I grew up on this orchard, and I have always been around all the activities of harvest, which is, picking apples, bins of apples moving through the orchard, pressing cider, a lot of customers coming and going. And now there's a new element where we're picking a new crop, and there's new smells and sounds and sights associated with it, and it's really been interesting.
Do you have some public events coming up where people can visit the farm?
Well, Indian Ladder Farms is open from May through December, 7 days a week. And right now is the time to come if you want to pick apples and pumpkins. And we have people coming in droves. And it's a great place to go in the fall. As we said, we just finished the hop harvest, so the hop vines are cut down. But you can still see the hop yard, and if anybody wants to stop by, we'd be happy to show them around the hop harvesting machine and, you know, it's the barley and the combines and all the things that we do for that end, too.
All right. We got off to a good start on the show. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
Yeah.
Woo!
In 1996, L. Knife & Son acquired Union Beer Distributors, which was originally located on Union Avenue in Brooklyn, but has since expanded to its present location alongside the English Kills Canal in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. Union Beer has grown dramatically in the last decade as the primary distributor of Anheuser-Busch products for Kings County, Brooklyn, through the hiring and development of the best people in the industry. In 2003, Union Beer acquired a powerful catalog of specialty brands, which immediately positioned them as the craft beer supplier to accounts in Manhattan, Brooklyn, Queens, and Staten Island. Union perpetually tweaks their portfolio to maintain the highest level of stylistic breadth with the most coveted brands available. Through the highest possible level of service, outstanding salesmanship of the ultimate lineup of brands, and a paramount focus on education on all levels, Union Beer has solidified its position as the only source for the best selection of beers in the 14 counties of southeastern New York. For more information, visit greatbrewers.com.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. We're drinking this great beer from Three's Brewery that Joel here made with Dieter and Stuart with some of your great fresh hops from Indian Ladder Farms. Man, this is amazing stuff.
It's really good.
And this is what I love about beer. And people talk about what's your favorite. Nothing against pumpkin beer, but I'm not really a big fan of pumpkin beer. People ask me, what's my fall beer? It's fresh hop beer, guys.
That's right. That's right.
So, but you guys need hops to make them. And so tell us more about the process of making this fresh hop beer, because I'm still don't always understand, you know, what fresh hop beer is or wet hop beer. And for me, it's I love the flavors of it, but I don't even really know how you make it. And Joel?
Yeah. I mean, wet hop beer is probably still the really only true seasonal beer that exists in today's day and age. I mean, these hops have to be used, you know, within 48 hours of being picked to, you know, really classify as a wet hop beer.
Yeah, because they'll start heating up and deteriorating, you know, within that period if, you know, we don't get them in the kettle right away. So it really is the most, you know, seasonal of the beers. I mean, we threw them in a cooler and drove, you know, right down here to get them in. And I know that you guys did a beer with John Condizales too, and they were kind of waiting it out. John was still picking, and they were, you know,
he's a Long Island hop grower.
Yeah, he's Long Island. He's a friend of ours, and in fact, he brokered our deal with our wolf. So we commiserate a lot on breakdowns and bugs and things.
Yeah, when he was there, we were brewing with his hops. He was talking with you on the phone, actually, I think.
that's probably true. Our harvester was up 6 days prior to picking, and we had a few hiccups along the way, so we got a few emergency calls to John, why doesn't it work, you know?
So now you're learning how to make beer with fresh hops, but let's go way back. So you started growing hops in your garden, but when you were first, you know, trying to become, you know, farmers of hops, what were you up against? Because this isn't Yakima, but this is like the great New York State. New York used to be the
New York State grew 80% of the hops in the country, you know, up until, you know, about the 1890s. And you know, like I like to say, you know, it's like if you're becoming a hop farmer, you don't have the advantages that other farmers have. So if you want to be a dairy farmer in New York State, you know, you're 30 years old, you say, I'm going to be a dairy farmer, you can go ask the old dude down the street, and he'll be really happy to help you. There's all sorts of information at Cooperative Extension and, you know, more than enough people to help you. If you want to be a hop farmer, unfortunately, all the old dudes died 100 years ago. So, you know, Cooperative Extension has been helpful, and Cornell's been helpful, and UVM's been helpful, but there's not those little nuanced knowledge that you need to know. And up until, you know, Laurie and I worked on this book, the information was really scattered all over the place. I mean, there's information in Oregon, there's information in Michigan, and what this book really does is it pulls it all together into one easy thing. I think Steve Miller, who's the extension agent at Madison County, really, you know, kind of summed it up in his thing. He said, up until now, there was never really a cookbook. You know, you really had to search the internet to find the information, and frankly, some of it was not correct.
So what are the challenges you had in growing hops in New York that you don't get in Yakima Valley?
Oh, well, the main thing is the weather. The kind of insects and diseases that impact hops flourish in a humid environment, and the reason why people started growing hops out west, Yakima Valley, it's a valley, but it's actually a high elevation desert. If you go out there, there's absolutely nothing growing except where it's irrigated. There's no moisture in the air whatsoever, and it practically never rains.
They get 8 inches a year.
And in Yakima Valley, they're almost essentially canals of irrigation. Yep. I mean, it's pretty
yes,
incredible
it's the,
to
the
see.
The Yakima River comes down from the Cascade Mountains. It's basically fed by snowmelt. Now, with the reduction in snow, their water source is going to be in jeopardy. But all of that water from the Yakima River is, as you say, is delivered via canals, a system of canals directly to the hop yards, and delivered to the hop plants through irrigation. The thing that's funny about hop plants is they demand a huge amount of water, but they absolutely hate to be wet. And when they're actually wet above ground, that's when diseases like downy mildew, which is one of our serious problems, that's when they become active because they travel through the water on the surface of the leaf. So one of the secrets of growing hops is to try to get them enough water, get them in a location where you can give them enough water, but they don't actually become wet and there's not a lot of moisture on them.
Right. And they also don't like wet feet. So they have to have very well-drained soil. They root very deep and they don't want to have, you know, moist roots. They can't sit in any kind of wet. So it is kind of ironic. You know, they want an inch and a half of water, you know, a week, and they're growing them in a place that gets 8 inches a year.
Okay, so I want to grow some hops. I'm reading your book. And then what's going to happen? You know, the first time out, after a couple of years, I got some hops, and I think I'm starting making money.
Well, you know, you can't make money if you're only growing a couple hops. So
that's not going to happen.
There's two different worlds. There's the world of trying to grow some hops for home brewing and in your garden for fun, and that's actually pretty doable. Hops are really, really vigorous, and they're really hard to kill. And if you don't get a lot of them in one place, the diseases and insects that come to you will probably be minimal. Once you start expanding to a certain level where there's enough of them, then you're going to start to draw in the pests that thrive in that environment. And it gets a lot more complicated. One of the things we did with the book, one of the problems we found in doing research when we started growing hops was a lot of the information, because there are no hop farmers, I mean, there's a few now, but there is not an industry in the Northeast. A lot of the information was written by agronomists and scientists who work for universities, and it was extremely technical. And, you know, you may have common sense about growing something, but if you don't know all the lingo, it gets very confusing. So one of the things we tried to do in the book is really break everything down into really simple language that everybody can understand. And if you want to start growing hops commercially, I would recommend starting on a very small scale, like an eighth of an acre, you know, maybe with like 50 plants or something like that.
Right.
And the other thing is to start slow. Take the time, instead of just throwing all your hop plants in the ground, take the time to prepare the soil because they need a lot of nitrogen and they need a lot of organic matter in the soil. And another problem is you have to be able to fight the weeds, because if you don't plant cover crops first and choke out all those weed seeds and all the root systems of the weeds before you plant, then those weeds are going to come on like crazy, and it's going to be really hard to fight them. And what they do is they create a very humid environment on the ground that's conducive to the spread of disease. So I would take like a year, plant cover crops, prepare your soil, choke out the weeds, build up the organic level, and then truthfully I would put up the trellis first. Some people don't. Put up your trellis system first, which involves putting in poles and cable and hanging the string. And then plant your hop rhizomes in the ground, and you'll have a place to train them when they start to grow.
It's funny. Last night we had a great party here at Heritage Radio Network at Roberta's. It was the launch of the website. Jack Inslee was DJing, and you can see if you go to the website, it's a lot more dynamic. You can go to the Beer Sessions Radio page and see all the shows and everything. But what was so cool is a guy came up to me who I knew for years. He said, "Hey man, I'm thinking about growing hops upstate." And I started telling him. I said, "Well, I guess you know." He actually thought that he was be able to grow hops and make money.
Well, that's tough. It is farming, and you know, growing an acre of hops is, you know, it's 1,000 plants. It's a huge startup cost. You know, if you're looking at putting up your trellising, buying your plants, your irrigation, your fertigation, and all that is about, you know, $15,000. That's just to get in the game, and then you're looking at a return on that of about 3 years. So. And not to mention that you're going to need equipment such as tractors and sprayers and like that. So really to make money, you really need about 5 acres. And that's a big nut, you know, to overcome. It's not that it can't be done. A lot of people are doing it. A lot of people that are doing it are already in the game. They are either, you know, own orchards or vineyards in the Finger Lakes, because they already have the base of the equipment to start up. So that's why we kind of say, you know, it's better to start slow and build towards that, because you can, you know, if you can get your soil, and we can't stress this enough from our experience, the hops that we have 4 yards now that we've put in over 4 years. And the ones that are doing way better are the ones that we took the time to prepare the soil, you know, a year to 2 years in advance. And, you know, people are very excited, and we understand that, you know, and they say, "I want to put my plants in the ground now." And it's like, well, you're looking for trouble down the road. So it's be patient. It would be my best advice.
I never thought patience would be part of farming. But.
No. There's a lot of patience in farming, and you have to also not be risk averse.
Well, one thing is that, you know, with the different New York State new laws, the farm brewery licenses and stuff, people are really excited about, you know, having beers made with New York State grains and hops, and we've been part of that in New York City Beer Week. We host an event, New York City Brewer's Choice, and now a number of brewers are making batches of beer for, you know, with all New York State ingredients. And what I'm trying to say is there's naysayers out there too. Like, you know, there's some new brewers are saying, "Oh, New York State's not going to be able to make the hops or the malt that we really need in the quantities, so we're not even going to think about using that." So what's the benefits of New York State growing hops and bringing back that
well,
culture?
You know, the naysayers that, you know, I have a bit of a problem with is because, you know, it's like you're saying all of a sudden it's like, well, here's an industry that disappeared 100 years ago. We'd like your hops tomorrow to be as good as Yakima. Well, that's not going to happen. I mean, it's going to take some time for the farmers to get on, you know, it's going to take several seasons for us to get up to speed. And Jimmy's just run out of beer. If someone could help him, it would be really, really great.
Yeah.
So and I think in the 4 years that we've been growing hops, I mean, we've overcome some tremendous hurdles, and now we have a pretty, you know, a really good product, I think.
Yeah.
And the same is going to be
for that.
You know, and
Joel, what do you want to say? He just grabbed the mic, so he wants to say something as a brewer.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. No, it's great to see someone like yourself committed to quality on something like this. It's like very nice to see you brought down these hops that were fantastic. You can see they made good beer.
Well, that's what we have to get to in New York State. We're never going to be able to compete on quantity. We're never, you know, going to go up against Yakima or Willamette or Idaho or, you know, probably even Colorado. But where I think we can compete is on a small scale, is that we can have more attention to detail in that, you know, on 1 acre as opposed to 1,000 acres, you know, you can almost, your hops are almost like pets. You know, each plant can be, you know, dealt with and so on. So, you know, you really have, you know, more control.
Why don't you talk about the oil?
And yeah, and this is another thing that we're finding, and I think that, you know, I think that Joel can attest to this, you know, is that we're finding that our hops have much higher oil content than the hops out west. When we send things out to Alpha Analytics, our oils come back for Cascade well above that, and I think Joel can
yeah,
speak
yeah,
to that.
Totally. No, I had to clean up after the whole brew. Everything was sticky. And a few things were sticky for a few days till we got on top of everything.
I'm all for it. I'll say from especially last year's New York City Beer Week, Kelly Taylor had at least 10 New York City brewers making smash beers, state malt and state hops, 100% New York State, you know, malt and hop beers. And those were the hands down the best beers that any of those breweries had ever made. You know, granted they were super small batch and everything, but I'm all for it. And I'm really glad you guys came on and I'm psyched about drinking your beer now. So, quick, what's this strawberry rhubarb? It's got some nice hops, fresh hop flavor.
Well, this would be, I guess, you'd consider this a smash beer. I mean, it's everything. It's a farmhouse beer. It's our basic farmhouse recipe, and we added, I don't know how many gallons of rhubarb slurry to it, and strawberries. I think there's like 30 pounds of strawberries in a 20-gallon batch, And we grew it's 100% Indian Ladder barley malt, and it's all our hops. And we even cultivated the secondary yeast off of some blueberries that were grown on the farm, and we now are growing up that yeast and are using it in some of our other beers.
Well, this is a fabulous show, man. I love having Dieter and Lori talk about what they're doing, because their book, here it is, the Hop Growers Handbook, is really special, and especially if you want to learn about growing hops. So we'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
You still paying attention?
Are you there? Hello, 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 hello. I'm talking to you. Hi. Hey, this is Jack Inslee. I'm the executive producer here at Heritage Radio Network. I've been here at the station since 2009, and I cannot believe just how much this network has grown over that time. We've been able to grow because of donations from people like you. So if you're enjoying this, if you laughed, if you learned something, contribute anything. $1, $2, $10, $100, $1,000. Anything counts. And trust me, we'll appreciate seeing your name come through on the donations. So consider visiting heritageradionetwork.org. Click on that little beating heart, the donate button, and show us you care. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoy the rest of the show.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. All right, we're talking about the Hop Growers Handbook. Lori and Dieter from Indian Ladder Farm. I would call it Indian River Farm, but...
No river.
How did you call it Indian Ladder? Where did that come from?
It's a region. It's actually Lori's great-grandfather named the farm. There's an Indian Ladder Trail, and it's a historic spot, basically, and he named the farm after that.
So you guys are... You went into growing hops, and you're becoming successful at it. Like, you've taken time, and you're teaching other people how to do it in New York State. But this book is amazing. So, Stephen, there's something in that book that you want to ask a question about, I'm sure.
Yeah, I mean, I'm curious about, because I know there are lots of people out there that are, like, eyeing the internet for, like, patches of land and think that this can be their dream. And I'm wondering, when you do start planting your hops... Hops come in many varieties. Is it important to kind of stick to what you know will be good? Maybe like one of them, or do you want to plant several and kind of see what grows best?
Yeah, well, I think that if you want to be successful in New York State, is plant Cascade. Cascade is a hop that brewers want. And it's a very disease-resistant and vigorous hop. So you want to have some success those first couple of years, you know, and then start branching out into some of the others that are, you know, there's a good list in the book, and also it's online with Cornell that gives you an idea of disease-resistant hops. Anything that is going to be resistant to downy mildew, which is the problem that we have in New York State because of the humidity. So I would stick to disease-resistant plants as much as you can. But we grow Centennial, and Centennial is affected by that, and it's feeble and weak, and it doesn't have high yield. But then why do we grow it? Well, it's a fantastic hop, and you know, brewers want it, and so we're willing to put up with the low yields on that, just to have something that's extraordinary.
Joel, as a brewer, if you could just ask Dieter, I want these three hops for my next beer, what would you ask him to grow?
Probably all proprietary stuff.
Yeah, thanks, Joel.
But I mean, like we've talked about this before. You're kind of looking at some new stuff, some heritage stuff.
We've been collecting some heritage varieties. We've got a heritage yard on the farm where we're pretty much. People are calling us all the time, hey, I got this hop growing in my backyard. So we try to get a little backstory from them, you know, are you renting the place? Is that some homebrewer's Cascade that was planted 20 years ago? Or is it like an example of we got some hops that came out of a place near Delhi called Bovina Center, New York? The hops are recorded in their Bible in 1820 when they bought the place that there were hops growing there. So we're like, well, yeah, we want some of that, you know. So we've got about six different hops that are taken from various parts in the state, and we're going to have some genetic testing done on them. And, you know, the long-term goal, I think, for New York State is like, you know, Joel is saying, the proprietary hops is what everybody, all the brewers want. They want the Citra. They want the Simcoe. I can't grow those. I can't afford to grow. I can't afford to get the licensing to do it because I'm on such a small scale. What we need in New York State is we need research money to go to Cornell to start a breeding program so that we can have, you know, a Citra or an Amarillo or something that is all New York State.
Yeah, it would be really exciting to have something like that from the Northeast. You know.
And most people might not realize that many hop varieties are actually possessions of other companies, and
right,
what do people need to do to make that
I mean, the reason they're possessions out there is because a lot of money and research money was put into it. I mean, the farmers got together as cooperatives and also worked with the universities, so you know, you can understand why they're proprietary. I mean, some of these farmers have put $100,000 into developing that, and they're not just going to give it to us. You know, so we need to work along those same lines, you know, whether it's getting money, grant money from, you know, Farm Viability Institute to start a long-term research program and take some of these New York State hops and do a breeding program and get something. I mean, we're in it for the long term here. I mean, you know, I think that, you know, 10 years down the road, we'll have something that's wonderful.
Yeah.
I just want to add that, you know, the state has been really proactive with the farm brewery law and creating a situation in which brewers can have special privileges and farms can make beer, providing that they use hops and barley grown in the state. And this was really a very visionary, and it turns out a very transformative thing. But there also has to be an investment on the other side of the table into the agricultural research. I think in the year the farm brewery law passed, there was $40,000 given to Cornell by the state government to figure out how to grow hops. And you know what? That's not enough money. I think the next year it went up to 80, but we really need to invest some resources into bringing back New York State's hop agriculture as well as malting barley, which is perfectly possible for New York State farmers to grow, and they used to grow it, and they can grow it again. They just need some of the education and training to do it.
And I think the more you guys do it, the more brewers will respond, and that's why we push our event, like New York City Brewers Choice, coming back up in February. And every brewer there is going to be working with, you know, some New York State farms. But let me ask you about these hops, because if you're looking at Twitter right now, somebody's posted, there's our in-house wild boar in the studio here, and you've draped it with your fresh hops. And I'm just got a little piece, and I keep sniffing it. You know, what about these health and aromatic benefits of hops? Because there's a lot of history to hops, too.
Yeah, Laurie can speak a little bit better to the medicinal properties of hops, can't you? She's looking at me.
Well, yeah. I mean, before hops were used in beer, and I'm talking like in the year 1000, they were really more of a medicinal plant.
Wait,
that Dieter,
can you give me another hop cone? I want to keep sniffing it.
Yeah.
It's pretty fun.
You know, what's nice is if you float them in your beer.
True. They found that hops were
good. We're just throwing hops around. It's
things
kind of
are
fun.
Getting a little crazy in here. Hops have really strong antibacterial properties, and they're good for treating infections. And one thing that was found out somewhere along the way was that when you started making beer with hops as opposed to other herbs, the hops were acted as a preservative. And this made the beer last longer, and it expanded the trade in beer because beer could travel longer distances and go to other markets without spoiling. Hops also have a phytoestrogen component, which is basically compounds that mimic the effects of estrogen. And that's why, you know, nursing mothers have always been told to drink a beer while you're nursing a baby.
So this is the thing. Guinness is good. That's a real claim, isn't it?
Yeah.
You could drink a stout, and it's good for your...
Yeah, it does. It's healthy.
The original Burt's Bees deodorant uses hops.
Well, yeah, that's I didn't know that.
Even better.
That's perfect.
I can just take this hop and rub it on my arms, and
it's gonna, you know, it's all.
I smell good for days.
Listen, it's already starting to smell a lot better in here now that you guys are tearing up the hop cones. The other thing is hops are soporific. They have sort of a property that makes you sleepy. You can take hop flowers and stuff pillows with them and sleep with your head on that pillow if you're insomniac, and it will help you fall asleep.
Let's go back to the beer. The Guinness is good for you. Remember there's that campaign? It was like Guinness is good, and everyone's seen the vintage posters, and it was geared towards nursing mothers, right?
Yeah.
So there is some truth to it.
Yes, because it's not estrogen, but it's called phytoestrogen, and it mimics estrogen. And if you ingest it, this compound that mimics estrogen. For a nursing mother, it helps the milk to start to flow, and that's why mothers were told to drink beer while they were nursing.
This is amazing. I mean, you've seen that ad, and people have always joked, "Oh yeah, really? Is stout good for nursing mothers?" But that's great to know that.
Yes,
always
true.
Drink responsibly.
That's right. Moderation.
It's good for babies.
Drink too. A lot, and you know, Guinness is good for you, right? Or something.
Beer is good for you.
Yeah. And then, Steve, what do you think of all this, man? You know, you've been making beer kits for a long time, and would you ever be able to... What's the best hop you can put into a beer kit?
It definitely depends. Most of our kits do use pelletized hops, and I guess that's also something I'm wondering.
Let's ask about, we're talking about the hop harvest... How you actually, the big issues you have, like drying the hops and how you do that.
Yeah, right now our biggest issue is drying. Unfortunately, our dryers came the day of harvest. And again, no instructions, everything's in German. So we ended up air drying everything, which is great if you're on a small scale. It protects the lupulin and so on. But when you're at an acre, drying by it with air, not using heat, really is not a good way to go. So next year we'll have our dryers up and running. But right now everything we have is dry except for one 75-pound batch that we harvested yesterday. So after this, we are taking everything out to the Whipple Brothers out near Rochester, and we're going to have everything pelletized. There's several advantages to pelletization. The brewers want pelletized. B, it makes the hops more stable, and it also compacts them, so it's easier for us to store them. If we have to store 100-pound bales of, you know, hop cones, it just takes up a tremendous amount of space, whereas the pellets don't. It makes it easier for the brewers. Brewers don't want to use cones, especially in a lot of the smaller systems. Sometimes when I walk in, you know, guys like Joel, you know, they see me coming in with big bags of wet tops. They know they're staying late because they got to clean up the brewery, and you know, so they may not like me so much. Whereas I show up with bags of pellets, they're happier.
Yeah, and our walk-in where we store our hops would be happier as well.
Right. Right. So we've gone to pelletizing. We are probably in the next couple of years going to put in our own pelletizer just because, you know, driving a truckload or two truckloads of hops 4 hours one way is not economic sense.
Joel, what is it like for you, though? I mean, we've heard about working with, what, fresh hops and cones versus the pellet. For working with the Indian ladder, I mean, is there the similar flavors between the pellets and the fresh?
Well, I mean, like, the fresh hops we got from them have a whole lot of oils that haven't volatilized in the whole drying and kilning process. And, you know, like, being packaged, you know, with 90% of the material, you know, being made into pellets. So there's some different oils that you don't normally get that are really fun. That's, like, why white hop beers, you know, almost no matter what the variety, are different than their, you know, pelletized and or dried components. So it's, it adds another dimension of flavor. I mean, if you're, you know, you're smelling a hop cone right now and it's, you know, it's,
I'm indulging myself. I'm just like, yeah. I'm putting the hops in my nose.
Yeah. Well, it's why wet hop beer, like we said, is truly the seasonal beer, because, you know, we just, you can't have wet hop beer all year round because we just don't grow hops year round. There's harvest. That's it.
And then what's coming down the pipeline? So you guys have a brewery, cidery that's coming, but you're still waiting.
Yeah, we're in the process of getting permitted by the federal government. We're very close. It's going to be the Indian Ladder Farmstead Brewery and Cidery. Because of federal laws, they don't really like the idea that we are a brewery and a cidery in the same building. So it's been a stumbling block that we've had to negotiate with them over the last 6 months, and they finally agreed that we can be something called alternating premise. So one day we are a cidery, and after a 24-hour period, we are a brewery. And nothing in between.
Well, it's good to see you guys breaking boundaries, you know? Come on. And Stuart, come on, you're part of this thing, too.
All right, well, I mean, the nice thing, as bad as it's been,
and you'll be you'll be peddling beer soon, I'm sure.
No,
so
no. As bad as it's been waiting,
he's going to be coming to Jimmy's 43.
We've been able to get a lot of things done in the meantime. So we've been really working on the infrastructure, working on, you know, building the brewery, the bar. We've been doing a hop school with a local beer distributor up in Albany, which has actually been a lot of fun, you know. And
so. Well, I'll tell you what, I've had your stout that you made with Other Half using your hops, and just now with these fresh hop beers from Three, so can't wait to try the beers that you guys are making too.
And the cider.
Steve, anything else you want to ask these guys?
I really just want to dig into this book. from everything I've learned just in the past hour, I can't imagine how much more I'll learn sitting down with this.
Well, Lori, one final piece of advice. So, you know, like I said, the guy last night said, I'm going to get some land and grow hops upstate and make money. What would you tell him to do first, besides reading your book?
Oh, besides reading the book?
Yeah.
Well, that's going to be huge. And if, truthfully, not to promote the book, but if we had had a book like this when we first started out, it would have been a lot easier. I think that the thing to remember, as I said, is to prep and start small. But the really, when you're a farmer, the real key is long-term optimism. And if you are a pessimist by nature or give up easily, it's probably not for you. But if you're willing to stick it out and think every year is a new year and just keep applying things that you learn every year, you will achieve some degree of success for sure. You know, is it an instant cash crop? No, it's not. It takes an investment of capital and time. It's a perennial that doesn't reach maturity for 3 years. Requires a lot of infrastructure, but it really can be done.
All right. Well, you guys really made a great show, and I've been looking forward to this. And Steve and I, we're going to fight over your book, and we're going to take it home and read it. But it's pretty deep. This is, I think, everything you need to know about growing hops in the Northeast, and especially in New York State. Great book, great job. Thanks for joining me. I'd like to thank our sponsors at Union Beer Distributors who have helped to bring this podcast to you tonight. Thanks to Laura, Dieter, Stuart, Joel, and Steven for joining me here on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni. Thanks to our producers, Justin Kennedy and Maggie Seiden, and our engineer, Jack Inslee. Thanks for listening. Catch you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. All right, yeah.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us with questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Hey, hey, this is Jimmy Carboni of Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Today is Tuesday, September 22nd, and we've been talking about the Hop Growers Handbook.
Yeah, it's a really exciting one.
Hey, Stephen, how are you, man?
I'm great. I'm Stephen from Brooklyn Beer Shop.
So it's great. We have you on all season. You're co-hosting with us, and pleasure being on the show, man.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Some special guests who wrote the Hop Growers Handbook. Dieter and Lori, how are you guys?
Yeah, Dietrich Gehring from the Indian Ladder Farmstead Brewery and Cidery. I'm co-author of the Hop Growers Handbook with my wife.
And this is Laura Tenike. Same for me.
Well, I'll tell you, I'm drinking your strawberry rhubarb beer that just, the nose is of this super fresh hops. And that was what we talked about on our show, and we're looking forward to tasting a lot more beers.
And Stuart Morris here from Indian Ladder Farms as well. Good to be back, Jimmy. Nice to see you.
So what am I tasting when I'm in my glass? It's strawberry rhubarb beer, but it's all hops.
We're it's a strawberry bomb, really.
That's amazing. Yeah. And then Joel from Threes. Dude, yeah. You guys just made a fresh hop beer with
We brewed our kind of rotating hop pale ale with wet hops from Indian Ladder Farms, and we just came out today, so we're really excited about it.
I'll tell you, next year we'll be at their hop harvest, but this year we're just celebrating fresh hops and their great book, Hop Growers Handbook. You can catch us live each and every Tuesday night on heritageradionetwork.org. Beer Sessions Radio, supported by Union Beer Distributors. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. All right, yeah.